the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrards. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the greatest disasters in world history and some you have never, ever heard of. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
My God. Brilliant. I tell you what, Phil, I don't think it should be our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rate to some of these disasters, should it, Phil?
No.
I think we should just be interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest with yourself, Phil, if some of this shit came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested, you bastard.
I bloody would, you tart blanket.
What are we talking about this week?
The Long Island rhesus monkey escape.
The commonest animals in the jungle are not always the easiest to catch. These rhesus monkeys are everywhere, but to put salt on their tails is as hard as putting lard on an eel. Monkeys are the most popular attraction at any zoo, and I always have a standing order for them. Any walk through the jungle offers 1,000 opportunities to capture them, and they always have 1,000 ways to keep them being captured. Catching them one by one would be a tiresome process, so I worked out a scheme for getting them in wholesale lots. We baited the trap with a regular three-course dinner. Chopped sweet potato, tapioca root, and rice. With a feed like that, we could have enticed the missing link, let alone a lot of hungry monkeys. From then on, it was a question of waiting until these monkeys got hungry enough to come down out of the trees. When they did decide that everything was on the up and up, they simply swarmed over the net. Their manners weren't very good, but they were having as much fun as a barrel of people. When I was sure that we had all the guests we could accommodate at our free lunch table, I gave Ollie a signal to jerk lines. When these monkeys finally found out that their free meal had a string to it, they were certainly excited. We were pretty excited too. For we had captured about 35 of them in one haul, enough to populate a complete monkey house and a zoo. It was a comparatively simple matter to get these chattering little imps into our cage and carry them back to camp. As a matter of fact, they soon had plenty of company. For at the end of the week, we'd gotten about 400 of them. And to make up for their first disappointment, the rest of their lives, all their meals would be on the house.
Monkeys, Phil!
Bloody love monkeys. Who doesn't love monkeys?
Last week, plane crash. This week, monkeys.
I put a teaser photograph saying we're recording this episode tonight and put a monkey up and someone went, please, please tell me this is a teaser for an episode about monkeys. Oh, yes, Chris.
Did you put the correct monkey up? Did you put a rhesus monkey up?
I did.
Could you spot a rhesus monkey out of the other monkeys?
I couldn't, but the moment I saw one, I knew what they were.
Oh, really? They've got nice faces, ain't they, rhesus monkeys?
Yeah, they're like the Gibraltar ones, aren't they?
Oh, they're very naughty, aren't they, Gibraltar monkeys?
They're incredibly naughty, yeah. They're like dogs turned up to 11. That's why I like them. They've got that naughtiness that a dog's got, which is endearing. Yeah. But then they just take it to a whole new level of bastard.
It's only really monkeys and dogs who've been in space, isn't it?
Yeah, monkeys and dogs. And that's because they only put the naughtiest animals in space.
Sure, and that's what it is.
Yeah. You probably find in 30 years when the archives get opened that the Russians sent seagulls into space as well. They're bastards, aren't they?
They just send the bastards up into space. Fair enough. You know, you go to Thailand or something and there's just monkeys about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a shame that we don't have that. Like here it is, seagulls, like ripping open bags of rubbish and strewing shit everywhere. Or the odd fox you'll get. A lot of foxes.
Mm.
But foxes aren't naughty, are they, Phil? And I'll tell you how we know foxes aren't naughty. Never been sent into space. We are closest to chimps and bonobos, aren't we?
Yes, you've done a lot about this, haven't you? You've done a lot of reading and research on this, haven't you?
Yes, that's right, because I'm unemployed. So what you tend to do is look at articles about monkeys.
Yeah.
What people don't know about chimps is they're absolute bastards.
Mm.
They like rip each other to pieces and they have wars and they have insane hierarchies. And they're basically like Caligula chimps. They're horrific. But bonobos just have sex. That's all they do. They have sex for fun and they have sex for money.
For money?
Yeah. Bonobos are the only other species apart from humans that pay for sex.
Well, when you say pay, I mean, I guess you're not talking about some sort of secret bonobo currency. You're talking about the odd banana or a leaf or something.
Talking about bananas, mate. Talking about a load of bananas for monkey sex. That's what I'm talking about. That's where we are. So, at some point, we all split off, didn't we? Because we've all got common ancestors. So at some point, they split off. And so we've got a little bit of, like, a little bit of chimp want to kill everybody, a little bit of bonobo want to fuck everybody.
Well, I can see that.
Turns out, that's the magic recipe for the space race and computers. You just got to mix a little bit of wanting to fuck everything with a little bit of wanting to kill everything, and you end up with a human. So, Phil, the Long Island Rhesus Monkey Escape.
Yes.
I had toyed with the idea, Phil, of calling this Escape from Monkey Mountain. But I clawed myself back because it doesn't fit with the tone, does it? But let it be known that in my mind, this will always be Escape from Monkey Mountain. So, Phil Lucas, the Long Island Rhesus Monkey Escape, what was that?
It was an error at a roadside zoo that accidentally released 172 monkeys into New York City.
That's a lot of monkeys.
That's a lot.
Oh, when did it happen?
21st of August 1935.
And how many people died?
Thankfully, Phil, there were no fatalities involved in this one. Just an awful lot of very naughty monkeys.
New York? What the hell are you talking about? New York? What's that city, is it?
It's a city, Phil. It's probably the most famous city in the world.
Yep.
You want three facts about it because you've never heard of it.
Fact me one time.
It is illegal to beep your car horn in New York City unless it's a proper emergency. There is a $350 fine for unnecessary beeping, which, if you've ever watched a TV show set in New York, or you've ever been to New York, every single person ignores that. That city lives on car beeping.
Back me two times.
Right up until the 1920s, if you wanted to move house in New York, you had to do it on May the 1st. That's a cushy job if you're a removal man, because you've got to do nothing all year and then just hulk your prices right up for one day of the year.
It's literally Christmas for removal men, isn't it? It's like it's a busy time of year, May the 1st. Bloody hell.
And you know what the day before is? Boxing Day.
Fact me three times.
Albert Einstein's eyes are kept in a safety deposit box somewhere in the city.
Do you know what? They've done lots of weird stuff with Einstein's bits and bobs, haven't they?
Have they?
Yeah, his brain's all over the place. Cleverest bloke who ever lived and everything. So as soon as he died, they whipped his brain out and people started doing experiments on it. So there's bits of his brain here and there in private collections and in people's houses. And his eyes, his eyes is just in a safe deposit box owned by his optician. His optician just whapped them out.
I suppose it's a bit more decorum. I mean, it's not like Rasputin or Napoleon where you can go and view their cock or something, is it?
You can see Rasputin's cock, can't you?
Yeah.
What a world we live in, Phil.
Yeah.
Okay. It'd be quite nice to try and like build a body just through these parts. I could go to New York and look at Albert Einstein's brain. I assume Rasputin's cock is in Russia somewhere, is he?
Yeah.
Can you go and see Roosevelt's knees somewhere?
You can see Thomas Hardy. Well, Thomas Hardy,
yeah.
He always said his heart was in Dorset, so he wanted to be buried there. But Victorians being Victorians were like, nah, you belong to us because you're really successful and loved. So as a nice gesture, we'll bury your heart there because that's what you wanted. But the rest of you, we're going to put in Westminster Abbey.
Do you think that Thomas Hardy was looking down from heaven going, it's a metaphor, for God's sake, I wrote like 20 books.
there is probably an urban myth, but there is a story that the person who dissected Thomas Hardy's heart and took it out, popped out the room, and then his dog came in, ate the heart, and because he was panicking, he replaced it with a pig's heart, and that's actually what's buried in the grave. But I think that's probably cobblers.
Do you know the thing about Nelson?
No.
For American people, you might not know who Nelson is, but who was he? He was an admiral, wasn't he, I suppose?
He was an admiral, yes, who had some famous victories in the sea.
Sea victories, yes. War and that.
But sea victory man.
Against Napoleon.
Yes, against Napoleon. A very well-respected person until the millennials.
Yes, that's right. But luckily, though, we've popped Nelson on a very, very tall tower.
Yeah. They can't topple him over without rope.
Much harder to push him into the sea. So anyway, old Nelson, he was on deck. He said, I see no ships. They shot him through the brainles. Mm. And then to get him home in one piece, they put him in a barrel of brandy.
That's right, to preserve him.
But sailors like brandy, so they bored into the bottom of the barrel and drank all, siphoned out all the brandy on the way home and drank it. So when they got back to Britain, Nelson was putrid. He was just a whiskey-smelling corpse, all shriveled up like a California raisin. Okay, so I understand all about New York. Thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome.
But, Phil, for God's sake, tell me about the monkeys.
All in good time, Phil. First things first. These naughty monkeys didn't escape and tore the island of Manhattan.
Oh.
Yeah, more's the pity. This isn't a story about 172 monkeys going up Trump Tower, getting hot dogs and frowning their way around the Museum of Modern Art.
Bollocks.
No, Phil, no. I'm sorry, but this takes place on Long Island, which is a larger island to the immediate right of Manhattan. If you're looking at it from the sky.
Long Island, is it?
Yeah, it's a very long island, Phil. It's about 118 miles long. That's over twice the distance to me and old Mother Lucas.
Oh, right.
And I will tell you about it almost immediately.
Long Island is a densely populated island in the southeast part of the state of New York, in the USA! The island comprises four counties, Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau County, and Suffolk County. With a land area of 1,401 square miles, Long Island is the 11th largest island in the United States and the 149th largest island in the world.
In the 1930s, Long Island was changing from being a fairly rural farming sort of place into being a fairly sort of suburban place, right?
Right, it was building new houses and that.
New houses, lots of new expressways, bridges. You know you're going somewhere where the bridge is being built. And those bridges, of course, allowed people to work in Manhattan but still have a nice house with a garden to go home to at night.
So, yeah, so it's all sort of parks and swimming and fields and generally the American dream sort of all over the place, is it?
Long Island, New York, America's fastest growing community. Home, place of business, playground for the millions who live in Nassau and Suffolk counties. But Long Island wasn't always like this. Not many years ago, it was a quiet, semi-rural community, just a place where things were going to happen. Maybe it's because the sun seems to hit that place a little more often. Or maybe it's a spot of fertile land that coaxes a farmer to it with promises of fulfillment. Maybe that's what brings men to a place. Men who make things happen. Men who'll take the promise of a place and make it grow. And if it's an exceptional place, it's likely to attract exceptional men. Men to write poems. When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed and the great star early drooped, men to build castles.
Long Island quickly became sort of New York City's retreat, and that's where sort of millions of people would go to and from the city and spend time relaxing there and swimming and going to the many parks and recreation areas and roadside zoos, it has to be said, which sprung up along the highways.
Sorry, roadside zoos? Is that... So it's basically a zoo on a motorway. Is that the deal? Because that's a new thing. That's a new thing on me.
Well, I mean, we are kind of into Tiger King territory here, aren't we? It's not something we really have in the UK, but in America, there actually is a really long tradition of private zoos and exotic animal collections that have sort of been opened to the public by these sort of flamboyant entrepreneurial oddballs.
That's right, Phil. And it's time to meet one of those flamboyant entrepreneurial oddballs right now, an absolute legend by the name of Frank Buck.
The Malayan jungle, as wild and as dangerous as the animals that live in it. Bringing these animals back alive is my business. And the jungle is my office. The only way to reach the real interior of the jungle is on the back of an elephant. These hardy beasts can carry over 500 pounds. but they're hardly what you'd call speedy. And I was anxious to get to work. From zoos back in America, I had orders to capture alive and deliver alive practically every type of animal that lived in the jungle. I've made many of these trips out of Singapore into the steaming depths of the backcountry, and each time I've been just as impatient to get off the trail and go to work. But an Indian elephant is not a Times Square taxi, and I've been out here too long to expect to hurry the east.
It's going to be fun to find out about Frank Buck, because Frank Buck is a little bit of an archetype, I've discovered. We seem to have one in every 10 or 15 years, a new Frank Buck comes up on the scene, right?
Yeah, you've had your Steve Irwin, haven't you? Your Terry Nutkins.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're absolutely on the money there, Phil. You're basically a cross between Indiana Jones, Steve Irwin and Terry Nutkins. That's where we are.
If you transferred Frank Buck's name to the UK, it'd be Kevin Quid.
Yeah. Nigel Schilling. So anyway, Nigel Schilling, he was a very colourful character.
Right.
Basically a bit of a fucking nightmare, if I'm honest. He was born, Phil, in 1884 in Gainesville in Texas, and he grew up in Dallas.
Ah.
Now, in a sentence that I guess only really makes sense if he grew up in Dallas during the late 19th century, Frank, he dropped out of school and became a cowpuncher. Now, I'm led to believe it's a sort of old world term for a sort of freelance cowboy, which to me just sounds like basically drifter.
Yeah.
And when he was a teenager, he would travel around punching cows and getting temporary work with travelling carnivals. And he was a bellboy for a bit. He's basically, you know, he's a grifter. That's what he is, yeah. Right, Frank. In 1911, he won $3,500 in a poker game, right? And immediately did what any of us would do when, if we were presented with an unexpected windfall, Phil. He bought a ticket to Brazil.
Okay.
Yes. Mainly to try and catch a load of exotic birds, because he thought that if he sold them in pet shops, he might be able to make a bit of money.
Oh, I thought he just went to Brazil for a bit of holiday.
He went to nick some birds, right?
Oh, okay.
So that's what Frank did. He went and nicked a load of canaries or whatever from Brazil, right? Brought them back and he sold them to pet shops and he made another $3,000.
Rocky road here.
It's worth Googling a picture of Frank Buck, because he literally, he looks like everybody's idea of a 30s explorer. Do you know what I mean? He's like pith helmet and like shirt open and all the rest of that, right? So I think he loved the life quite quickly. He quickly became pretty addicted to stealing animals. He loved nicking animals from other people's countries, Frank, right? For about 25 years, Frank travelled all over the world and he stole as many exotic animals as he could find. Frank Buckville, he stole animals from Africa, Australia, South America, Malaysia, Borneo, and all over Southeast Asia. And he sold like wild animals and exotic animals just to circuses and zoos around the world. Like, it was a job you could have.
What a time to be alive.
I know, like, it's mental, isn't it? The 30s, you could just go to a country, nick a tiger.
I'll have that.
Bring it back and just get, and someone gives you top dollar for it, and that's it, your job's done, right? All you've got to do is put your pith helmet back on and fuck off home, right? By the end of the 20s, Frank Buck, yeah, old Nigel Schilling, he was the world's leading supplier of wild animals.
Well,
he's basically Del Boy. He's selling tigers out of a suitcase out the back of Harrods. Right?
Wow.
Later in his life, they asked Frank how many animals he had sourced, let's say. I don't think Frank's going to sue us. You know, it's 90 years ago. But he admitted that over the years, over his working life, Frank Buck stole something in the region of, Phil, 49 elephants.
Wow.
60 tigers. Ooh. 63 leopards. 20 hyenas, 52 orangutans, 100 gibbons, 20 tapirs, 120 Asiatic antelope, which sounds to me like a herd of fucking antelope.
Yeah,
9 pygmy water buffalo.
Oh, they're still not small as even the pygmies.
18 African antelope.
Jesus.
40
Christ.
Goats, 11 camels, 2 giraffes. 40 kangaroos, 5 Indian rhinoceroses, 60 bears, 90 pythons, 10 king cobras, 25 giant monitor lizards, 15 crocodiles, 100,000 wild birds.
Wow.
And 5,000 monkeys.
Bloody hell. Anything to declare, sir?
So essentially, Frank Buck in the 1920s was trying to build the fucking Ark.
Jesus. Right? That phenomenal amount.
In 1923, Phil, Frank Buck, he was so good at nicking animals, right, that he was hired as a director of San Diego Zoo.
Well, makes sense. I mean, he may have done it through unethical means, but he's probably learned a lot about animals, so a good job placement for him.
He was fired almost immediately.
Oh!
He was fired within weeks, Phil, from the San Diego Zoo.
Ah, okay.
For what the board of directors called arrogance, ineptitude and questionable veterinary practices. Who'd have thought it for a man who's just stolen 5,000 monkeys?
questionable veterinary practices?
Yes, I think what they're referring to is that he absolutely refused to stop oiling elephants. Now...
Okay.
Now,
it always makes me livid when people refuse to do that.
You know what punters are like. They like elephants to be shiny. Yeah. Right? It's just showbiz, mate. And in the 20s, or in the whole of the 19th century, actually, before the 20th, like circus people and show people, they used to oil up elephant skin, right?
Right.
And the reason they did it is because they thought it helped their skin, like stop their skin from cracking in the heat. The
right.
sun, right? Basically, like us, they thought, no, we like having like all of Yule all over us, so probably elephants do as well.
Right, yeah.
But actually, just gives elephants pneumonia, so it's not great.
Oh, Jesus.
But if there's one thing we know about Frank, it's that you can't tell that fucker nothing. Right? You can't tell him nothing, Phil. He was repeatedly asked by the San Diego Zoo to stop oiling the elephants. The veterinary staff told him to stop oiling the elephants, but he just wouldn't do it. He wouldn't listen, Phil. Basically, what happened is Frank had oiled up the elephants, then the vets would spend weeks nursing the elephants back to health, only to find out that Frank had oiled them up again. This is all completely true, by the way. This is totally true. And so, in the end, they just had to give him the boot.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, Phil, you know what happened in 1929, don't you?
The Wall Street crash.
And that absolutely buggered Frank.
Oh, Africa breathes a sigh of relief.
And so, he had a mate who said to him, Frank, I tell you what, all this animal stealing's fine, but now that you can't go to Asia and nick monkeys anymore, why don't you write a book about nicking monkeys? Which Frank did, and he wrote a book which became an absolute massive bestseller.
Oh, okay.
His book was called Bring 'Em Back Alive, Phil.
I think I've heard of that.
Have you really? Have you heard?
It's a phrase, isn't it? It's a phrase like Bring 'Em Back Alive.
Well, he was known for a while as Frank Bring 'Em Back Alive Buck. That was his name.
Brilliant. When did he write that?
1930 is Bring 'Em Back Alive. Do you want an excerpt of Bring 'Em Back Alive, Phil?
Oh, yeah.
I was once forced to kill a python, according to the old jungle rule of self-preservation. Something struck my arm with a hammer-like blow. I felt a painfully strong grip on my forearm and saw the head of an immense python. Through the intense pain, I realized that once he got his coils around my body, he could crush out my life in a minute. I called for Ali, who started hacking at the python's neck with his prong. The pressure was tremendous. At any moment, the terrible strain must snap the bone. With the superhuman effort some men manage under stress, I loosed my revolver from its holster and put two bullets into the back of his head. The python slid to the ground and I stood free. So Frank sounds amazing.
That sounds incredible. I mean, so much so that towards the end of that, I was so excited. I've gone straight on eBay. You can buy a copy of the book for £5.
Well, I'll tell you the reason you can buy a copy of the book, because we're not talking about some book that was just like no one's ever heard of. This is a big thing. And I reckon American listeners will have heard of this book.
Hmm.
In fact, it sold so well that the next time he buggered off to the Far East, he took a film crew with him.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And they made a film version of Bring 'Em Back Alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was released in 1932, and it was a box office smash film, massive.
Right.
One of the biggest films of the 30s. Jeez. Probably not, but it was a big film in the 30s. Made a profit of about $150,000, which is $2.5 million adjusted for inflation. So it's not like a huge film, but it's a big old success for a movie.
It's not bad for a bloke who was broke. Would that have been a talkie? It wouldn't have been, would it?
I think Bring 'Em Back Alive is a talkie.
Right.
But he'd taken film crews with him before, and so there are silent films of Frank Buck out in the jungle.
Right.
But I think Bring Him Back Alive as a talkie. But after, because the movie was so successful, and it kicked off an empire, so he made lots of films. Mm. So not only was Frank Buck in lots of his own films, he also makes cameos in lots of other American movies.
So he's a real celeb.
Yeah, maybe not household name level, but very famous. I'd say very famous. Right?
Yeah.
He wrote loads of books. One of his books is called On Jungle Trails, right? Mm. Written in 1937. And it was a kind of like half boy's own adventure story, half like geography textbook. Right? And they used that in public schools in Texas for years.
What? Teach kids how to nick animals?
Yeah, teach people what Africa looked like and what you can nick from it. Perfect.
This sounds like the sort of bloke who could drop his breakfast egg on the kitchen floor and make money out of it.
He's a grifter.
He's an absolute ball-busting, money-making grifter. Fair play to him. Apart from the ethical animal element, which is quite shocking.
But, you know, different time, 1930. And it's not like that we've learned anything, is it?
No.
You know, we've still got loads of these zoos of people nicking animals and stuff.
You just have to be a little bit more covert about it nowadays because of the worldwide global communications. But the mindset's the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Phil. Okay, I've got the measure of the man.
Yeah.
I think I like him, although I think that's wrong. He started out punching cows.
Deafers.
And then he nicked a load of animals from Brazil and wrote a book about it.
That's the one, Phil. Now. So that's where we are in the 1930s, okay?
Okay.
Now, I don't want you to give the impression that old Frank, who for a shilling buck, he nicked a load of animals and just sold them to other zoos and carnivals and stuff. He kept the best ones for himself, Phil.
Sensible. Like the French with their wine.
Exactly. The best monkeys go to my house.
Phil, the best monkeys go to my house, Gerard.
We need merch for the podcast, so I reckon we could have the best monkeys at my house.
Definitely. I would have the best monkeys go to my house key ring.
Okay, let's write it down.
Yeah.
Now, Frank Buck's first exotic animal exhibit was in 1933, Philip Lucas, and it was called Frank Buck's Jungle Camp and Zoological Garden.
Oh, okay.
And actually, it was for the Chicago Century of Progress exhibition.
Mm.
The Chicago Tribune, Phil, said that visitors to the exhibition, still mired in the malaise of the Great Depression, could glimpse a happier, not too distant future, all driven by innovation in science and technology. It doesn't sound exactly like nicking a load of zebras and trapping them in a cage by a motorway, but there we are.
Mind you, if you're just coming out of the Great Depression, like seeing a windscreen wiper is going to get you excited, isn't it?
I think that's the main point here. People are miserable, right? And there are some things that will cheer a miserable person up. But if someone's really down, if they've lost everything, they got no money, they got no hope, they got no future, ain't nothing going to work apart from a monkey. Right. Only monkeys have the ability to cheer people up that depressed.
I think 2021 should officially be the year of the monkey.
Definitely. 2021, let's fill that year with monkeys. We'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
More than 2 million people came to see Frank's bit of that exhibition film.
2 million?
Yes, it was really, really popular.
Bloody Nora, that's massive.
I mean, the guy's kind of a celebrity, right? So it'd be like Brian May showing off his guitars or something.
When I went to the boat exhibition at Earl's Court in 1983, there weren't that many people around Mike Smith.
But no, 2 million people came. And what it was, Phil, it sounded like it was quite cool. It was supposed to be a reproduction of the camp he'd lived with among the natives while stealing animals in British Malaya.
I bet it was rubbish.
I can't imagine it being 100% sympathetic to the natives.
No.
I don't want to be all sort of like woke about it, but I imagine there probably were quite a few white men blacked up with pretend bones through the noses.
Yeah, I think Bernard Breslau in Carrying Up the Jungle.
Netting, an awful lot of netting. Moss netting.
And just one single forlorn looking skinny antelope.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Phil, while he was schmoozing at the exhibition, Frank Buck, he met a man called T.A. Loveland.
That's a good name.
T.A. Loveland to me sounds like the ultimate grifter's name.
Only Americans would get away with that. I couldn't go to somebody and call, I'm P.M. Lucas. Doesn't work. It'd be like, well, what's your name, you twat? But T.A. Loveland, you go, yep, I get it. You're T.A.
It's not as good, is it, in England?
It's not as good. B.A. Baracus, it works.
It works, doesn't it? T.J. Hooker.
Yes.
T.A. Loveland. I imagine he wound up the rest of his days selling monorails to Brockway, Ogdenville and North Haverbrook.
F.W. West.
Who's that?
Fred West.
Fred West. Yeah, you'd trust F.W. West, wouldn't you?
Anyway.
So Frank Brigham Back Alive Buck and T.A. Loveland, they became business partners, right? And they leased 40 acres of land in Massapequa by the Sunrise Highway on Long Island.
Oh, okay.
There was actually a bit of a zoo there in Massapequa already, owned by a man called Mr. Charles Beale.
Okay.
He had like a lion and an elephant house there at the time. But Frank and T.A., they added 1,000 new exotic animals out of the back of Frank's van.
Bloody hell.
And they built a 3-story mock Tudor building. Classy. nothing says class like mock Tudor, doesn't it?
Lovely famous Harry Hill joke. Why is it only Tudor buildings they mock?
Yes, they built a 3-story piss take Tudor building. They called it Frank Buck Hotel because he's an incredible narcissist. And there was loads of restaurants and shops. It's a zoo, Phil. They built a zoo. And they called it Frank Buck's Jungle Camp. And for some reason, always referred to it as being in Amityville, even though it wasn't. The most popular attraction on Frank Buck's Jungle Camp was Monkey Mountain.
Monkey Mountain.
Monkey Mountain, Phil. If you were going to Frank Buck's Jungle Camp in the 1930s, what the kids are going mental for in the back of the Buick is Monkey Mountain.
You've got no internet.
No internet.
You've got no Netflix. You've got no iSpy books. You're going to get excited by Monkey Mountain, aren't you?
I'm still excited about Monkey Mountain.
I mean, I still would, yeah, to be fair.
Monkey Mountain was a 75-foot man-made mountain made specifically for monkeys. All right?
Love it.
We'll put a picture up on Twitter of Monkey Mountain, but basically sort of looks like an upside down concrete shuttlecock covered with monkeys. That's what we're dealing with.
There were many different species of monkeys on Monkey Mountain, but the main monkey escapees on this fateful day were rhesus macaques. The rhesus macaques, or macaca mulata, sounds like a very posh coffee indeed, doesn't it?
Terribly posh coffee.
A macaca mulata. Do you want some sprinkles on that? Yes, please, on the macaca mulata. Anyway, these macaca mulata, they usually live in Asia.
When they're not being nicked by 1930s American grifters.
Yeah, I mean, by 1932, I should imagine they're all petrified in caves hiding. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these little monkeys. I'm sure you have. They have these desperately cute little expressive faces and like a brown blonde hair. It's not just like Justin Bieber, really.
Yeah, little Justin Bieber.
They lived about 5 years old in the wild, but about 30 in captivity. That's a way round you don't often hear, is it?
They live longer in captivity than they do in the wild.
Very odd, because you know, you get like a killer whale and it lives to about 30 in the wild normally and about 3 weeks in captivity.
Yeah. That's what you expect, isn't it? I've seen Tillicum.
Apparently, this is because macaques are eaten by pretty much everything, including dogs, weasels, crocodiles, snakes, birds of prey, tigers, and even the poor little bastards, sharks. And if they've done a Pac-Man scenario and avoided every single one of those things, you still got Frank Buck coming along.
Sounds like they're terribly tasty.
Yeah, you can eat them, can't you, apparently?
Can you eat a monkey? I mean, they do in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, don't they? Chilled monkey brains.
I've often said that if a human being can eat a lobster, which is an animal that is so ugly, it was clearly designed to never be considered to be eaten, then we'll eat anything.
Yeah.
Now, these little rhesus macaques, they are so similar to humans, right? That they have been used for a lot of medical and psychological experiments over the years.
Oh.
But on the plus side, we can thank these little naughty monkeys for our rabies and our polio vaccinations.
Thank you, monkeys.
Plus, rhesus monkeys were also the first monkeys in space, Phil. There were 6 of them, yeah? Albert.
Yeah.
Albert 2.
Yeah.
Albert 3.
Right.
Albert 4.
Right.
Albert 5.
Yes.
And Yorick.
Yeah. That is a monkey handler telling all the other people in the space probe, look, don't get attached to these monkeys. Right? Because there is no return journey for Albert 2, Albert 3, Albert 4, or Albert 5. Yorick? Wasn't Yorick literally a skull? They haven't got much faith in Yorick coming back, have they? All things considered, Phil, it looks pretty shit being a macaque.
Anyway, Phil, back to Monkey Mountain. Crucially, there was no fence around Monkey Mountain.
Seems like an oversight.
Instead, Frank had dug a moat around the exhibit. Well, fair play to him.
Right.
Because he was under the impression that monkeys can't swim. Now, the thing about monkeys is they can swim. They bloody love swimming, which is why they sometimes get eaten by sharks. I'm concerned that he'd spent so much time abroad nicking animals that he hadn't noticed that monkeys quite like water, but...
He probably didn't even know they lived in trees. Basically, he's gone to Asia, he's seen a monkey in a Starbucks, and he's gone back to America and gone, they live in Starbucks, mate. I bet they was leaking exotic animals like nobody's business.
Oh, I bet it was.
Exotic echidna just wandering around motorways because Frank Buck doesn't know that deer can walk along a road.
Don't be a fool. The antelopes can't walk with their flippers. Now, this monkey escape was just one of many mishaps. An employee of Frank Buck's jungle camp, a chap called Otis Lloyd. Now, he narrowly escaped being crushed to death by an 18-foot-long Singapore rock taipan.
Nice.
Cole Smith, another employee, he was bitten by a venomous cottonmouth snake.
Cool.
Stuart Rowe, his mate and fellow employee, had his arm ripped off by a lion.
Fucking hell.
And even Frank himself was trampled by a rodeo horse that he was trying to mount. In a non-sexual way, he was trying to get on it. Right, Phil, that is more than enough of that. We all know about Frank Buck and his leaky Long Island Zoo. Now, for God's sake, please tell us about the monkeys.
It was around noon, Phil. On the 21st of August, 1935, on Monkey Mountain.
Noon on Monkey Mountain.
This around noon on the 21st of August on Monkey Mountain started like any other. You know how zoos operate. You've got a load of people who are out of work, they've got no skills, and so they're working on Monkey Mountain. And this particular out-of-work chancer, who was a maintenance man, was a dude called Charles Sellner. Now, Charles Sellner is the nub and crux of this whole disaster, right? He reported to Frank Buck's jungle camp as usual that morning, and his only job was to bathe the monkeys.
Bathe them?
Yeah, he's got to wash the monkeys, mate.
Right.
They said, Charles, get out there, get your mop, get your bucket, put your shirt on, Charles, get out there and wash a fucking monkey, right? So he got his mop and bucket, and with what the New York Times quite snottily called an indifference born of long familiarity, I'm washing a fucking monkey again. He lowered a plank, Phil, from the 8-foot-tall protective wall around the moat of Monkey Mountain.
Right, okay, yeah.
To form a sort of narrow makeshift bridge, right, to get over to the mat. Essentially, put a plank down, Phil.
Right, okay, yeah. He improvised a ladder.
He improvised a plank to get onto Monkey Mountain over the moat. He started to bathe the monkeys, right, which I imagine is an awesome job.
Yeah, I imagine that.
I bet they're absolute bastards as well when you try to wash them. Anyway... So as Charlie, he started to bathe the monkeys with his brush. But after about 3 minutes of monkey washing, he realised, he hadn't put the plank back, mate.
Oh, dear.
He looks behind him and immediately sees a long line of monkeys streaming off Monkey Mountain, led by, and I'm not making this up, Phil, a monkey called Al Capone. Now, I have looked into this, Phil, and as far as I can tell... That monkey was not called Al Capone after the fact. That monkey escape was masterminded by a monkey called Al Capone. There wasn't like a monkey escape and they went, I tell you what, we'll say it was led by Al Capone. Charlie literally looked over and went, where's Al Capone leading them fucking monkeys? As the New York Times reported at the time, Phil...
Like endless soldiers on a moving belt, scores of good-humoured monkeys went prancing to freedom, one after another nuzzling just close enough to provide maximum speed with minimum risk of traffic congestion, the inhabitants of the finest monkey hotel on Long Island headed for parts unknown.
I think the New York Times might just slightly be taking the piss.
Oh, but what beautiful imagery. Good-humoured monkeys prancing to freedom, all led by Al Capone.
By now, Phil, the alarm had already been raised by a Mrs. Arthur Soper of Brentwood, Phil. Mrs. Arthur Soper of Brentwood, and she'd seen the whole affair, Phil. She said there's an escape on Monkey Mountain, right? And she raised the alarms. The sirens are going. There's the big searchlights are on the ground, right? Got the dogs out because Mrs. Arthur Soper of Brentwood, she's let the people know. Right now, the park employees, right, they immediately managed to catch two monkeys.
Oh, slow monkeys.
The slowest monkeys, they got them straight away, right? And they returned them to Monkey Mountain.
Right.
this early stage we don't know very much about because there's an awful lot of panic.
Very difficult to work to any predestined organisational plan when a load of monkeys escape off a man-made mountain.
Exactly. This is the day we hoped would never happen, right? Maybe one monkey's escaping, fine. Two monkeys we can deal with. However, it was discovered that 172 monkeys had now escaped and were at large on Long Island.
That's a lot of monkeys!
Monkey sightings started coming in very quickly from across the island. Homeowners discovered monkeys playing in their gardens, Phil. And some fruit stand owners were hassled by troops of hungry monkeys stealing from their stalls. Very much unprecedented scenes on Long Island. Now then, about 50 monkeys successfully delayed an eastbound Long Island Railroad train that had just left Massapequa for Seaford. It's not a great place for monkeys to be, and two of these monkeys were sadly electrocuted by the third rail.
They're not rail savvy, are they, monkeys?
Two more monkeys climbed up the high tension tower of the Long Island Lighting Company near Hicksville and were also sadly electrocuted.
Oh.
So, almost immediately, monkeys are being electrocuted on Long Island.
So frazzled monkeys are falling from the sky now.
John Secchio, an Amityville ice dealer, spotted a group of monkeys running along a road south of Sunrise Highway, Phil. He's not a stupid man, John, and he quickly twigged that they'll be from Frank Buck's jungle camp because he'd probably rounded up three or four moose and taken them back just the week before. John, like any civic-minded gentleman of the age, he returned to where he'd seen those monkeys later on with a basket of apples and was able to lure several hungry monkeys into the back of his van. And so John and his van full of monkeys drove back to Monkey Mountain and repatriated the monkeys. Right.
Fair play to him. A, I wouldn't even know where to get a basket of apples from. And B, I wouldn't bother. I'd just go, that's not my problem.
I think that is a big difference, isn't it? If I saw 50 monkeys on a highway, I'd go, that, more than anything, is someone else's problem. At midnight, Phil, an accident took place on Seaford Avenue. Just as a gentleman called Sydney Mills, Phil, was driving towards Merrick Road, he was startled by 35 chattering monkeys sitting in the middle of the road. Midnight, this is. Midnight.
Oh, you'd think it's the end of the world.
Sydney swerved to avoid the monkeys, but unfortunately he killed one of the monkeys and he crashed his car into a tree.
Oh, man, I'm not laughing about the monkey, but I like the idea of 35 chattering. Oh, that was good, wasn't it? Good escape that was. I enjoyed that. Do you think you'll go back? Nah, I ain't going back. Love it out here. Love it.
Sydney pulled himself out of the wreck of his car and then, chased by monkeys, he managed to find himself a nearby telephone.
Well, they'd be annoyed, wouldn't they? He's killed their mate.
He went to a nearby phone box and he managed to contact Frank Buck's jungle camp.
Well, there's always someone there at midnight.
Well, there's an emergency on, Phil. They've had a monkey break. Now, they swing into action straight away and they send a squad car of zookeepers to the scene. They manage to catch seven of the monkeys.
Yeah.
But the rest, unfortunately, vanished into the darkness.
Ah, clever monkeys.
The official report at the end of that first day, Phil, is 5 dead, 47 captured, while 30 monkeys simply decided to go back to the park of their own accord.
The grass wasn't greener.
They had to look at Long Island and they went, fuck it, mate, I'm going back to Monkey Mountain.
I can't keep up with the pace of life in the Vanderbilt mansion.
But, Phil, as night fell on the 21st of August, over 100 monkeys were still missing on Long Island. With all this going on, Phil, Frank Buck, you'll never guess where he was.
He was probably at the front of this, sorting it all out.
Bollocks to that. No, he was in the Far East nicking more monkeys.
Oh.
So Frank's in the Far East on another jungle expedition. So his partner, T.A. Loveland...
Oh, T.J. Hooker, yeah.
To get a handle on the situation, he sent a telegram to the police commissioner of New York City, a man called Lewis Valentine.
Right.
Telegram stated that 150 rhesus monkeys have escaped from Monkey Mountain and they're heading for New York, led by Al Capone. which is a telegram I think would probably be worth framing if you managed to get hold of it. Days later, Phil.
Right.
Many monkeys are still at large, including Al Capone, the mastermind of the monkey escape. The August the 31st, 1935 issue of the Brooklyn Daily Eagle reported that some monkeys had now even been seen roaming free of the sidewalks of New York. They've got to Manhattan, Phil!
They'd gone to Brooklyn, they'd walked like John Travolta down the street, and then they got over Brooklyn Bridge and they're in.
They're in. So this telegram to the police commissioner hadn't gone unnoticed. They'd swung into action and a $50 reward was issued for Al Capone. This is true, by the way. They issued a £50 reward for Al Capone. But if you just managed to catch a monkey, you got a free season pass to the park.
Right? What's the point? There's nothing there.
There's nothing there, mate. They're all hanging off the Empire State Building by now.
I sort of like, I'd imagine El Capone just happened to be the first monkey to inquisitively go, "Ooh, I wonder what's over there." And he pops along and the others go, "Ooh, we'll follow him." I don't think it's like Braveheart.
Do you think they're trying to track this monkey around New York for years and years and years, never get anywhere until somebody looks into his tax records and then they get him that way. Over the next few weeks, Phil, these naughty monkeys, by now hungry, very tired, return to the camp mainly under their own steam.
Oh, clever monkeys.
It's basically the monkey equivalent of Ferris Bueller's Day Out, this. Right? All of these monkeys are recaptured, Phil, apart from six.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
These are the six monkeys that were being led by Al Capone. So the Capone Sextet, they made it out.
He is more savvy than all of the police in Manhattan. Fair play to El Capone, the monkey.
He's beat them all, man. He's got a job on Wall Street. Right? I'm sad to say this, Phil, but I have scoured the internet. I can find no information as to the current whereabouts of Al Capone.
Oh, what a shame.
I don't know if he returned to Monkey Mountain on his own with a disguise, a wig and a big moustache.
Riddled with syphilis. I reckon that if I was in a troop of wayward monkeys, I would head down to Florida. The weather's good, no one knows you're there, and you can hole up in Silver Spring State Park.
Right.
This isn't a completely fanciful idea, Phil, because Silver Spring State Park does have a terrible problem with rhesus monkeys. And there is some circumstantial evidence that it might all be Frank Buck's fault.
Aggressive monkeys here at a popular Florida state park caught on camera. A Florida family today says the wild animals charged at them without warning.
A family's visit to a state park in Ocala didn't go as planned.
Went from, oh, look at the cute monkeys to like, oh my God, our lives are in danger.
Susie Ramsey feared for the safety of her two kids.
And all of a sudden, four, I assume, big males kind of charged us.
Run, run!
And surrounded us. And we're grunting and hissing.
Run!
Ramsey says her parents stood their ground, growling back at the monkeys as she and her boys backed away.
I honestly think they might have been attacked if they hadn't kind of stood their ground.
Susie Ramsey spoke to us today to warn you about her experience at the Silver Springs Park this weekend. The monkeys chased them away from the pavilion and down the sidewalk before finally letting up.
So I was thinking, wow, maybe that was their home, that was their territory, but it wasn't. The people at the front said they're normally not there. So there should be a sign that says, you know, these wild monkeys are here and you should take precaution.
I'm Adam Weiner for The Now, Tampa Bay.
You see, Frank wasn't the only person losing monkeys all over the place in the 1930s. Back in 1938, another flamboyant entrepreneurial oddball called Colonel Tui lost six rhesus macaques on a small island in Silver Spring Park. Now, they must be loving it down in Florida, because between 1984 and 2012, Florida wildlife officials have had to remove more than 1,000 of them to stop them hurting humans.
Are they violent or something?
They can be a bit violent, yeah. You know, you approach a rhesus monkey very much on their terms.
Like a Liverpudlian. Sorry, Liverpool, I love you.
Now, one of the reasons they hurt people, as well as biffing them if they try and get hold of their lemons or whatever they're eating, is you see that these monkeys carry a rare virus called herpes B. And it's extremely rare, I must say, for herpes B to spread from a monkey to a human.
Yeah.
I think you know what you might have to do with a monkey to get a disease like herpes. B. Yes. But when that does happen...
When that happens.
if that does happen, it can be fatal.
Oh, Jesus, really? Okay.
So there's a cautionary tale for all of us when we're in Florida. Now, poor old Colonel Tui, remember the bloke who brought this deadly herpes B virus to Florida? He just wanted to build a Tarzan theme park.
We've all done it, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to have a girlfriend, isn't it? Because then you can say, you know what? Should I build a Tarzan theme park? And she can go, no. Just go back to work, you fucking loser.
Here's the thing, though, Phil. Here's the thing, right? Colonel Tui, he's got all these rhesus monkeys. They're all in the state park in Florida. Do you know where he got them from? In 1938, he got them from a dealer in New York City. We all know that if you were in the Big Apple for a weekend back in the 1930s and you found yourself in want of a monkey, there was only one man to go to. Frank Buck.
Frankie Buck.
Frank Buck, super spreader.
So what happened to Frank, the dirty entrepreneurial grifter bastard cowpuncher?
After World War II, he went back to nicking animals, but it sounds like his heart wasn't really in it, because he said in an article in the New Yorker,
"You dig the same old-fashioned pits, use the same old-fashioned knives, and come back with the same old-fashioned tigers."
He'd lost his spunk, Phil, and he died of lung cancer, unfortunately, on March the 25th, 1950 in Houston, and he was only age 66.
Live fast, die young, steal 5,000 monkeys and leave a good-looking corpse.
Buck's daughter, Barbara Buck, said that her father's story gave the country a boost during these tough times of the, you know, Wall Street crash and the Great Depression. She said,
"So he was doing his thing in the Depression. Like, people just weren't going anywhere. And, like, money was so tight. It was like an escape."
Well, I think she's right there. But he also did nick a lot of animals from their natural habitats. Even though he was known as Frank Bring 'em Back Alive Buck, many of his animals didn't actually come back alive and died during the journey.
Yeah.
So I think we should give the last word, Phil, to Mary Beth Sweetland, who is the Director of Research, Investigations and Rescue at the National Headquarters of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Back in the year 2000, she said that he was probably doing what he thought was right back then, but Buck had it all wrong, and he certainly didn't do any animals any favours.
So, Phil, that was the story of the Long Island rhesus monkey escape. Was it our fault or God's fault, Phil Lucas?
It was Frank Buck's fault for not leaving monkeys where they belong, Phil.
Yeah.
And whatever you think about it morally, his legacy is that a monkey called Al Capone led a band of freedom-loving monkeys across a plank of wood into Manhattan. And you can't argue with that.
So, Phil, have we had any reviews since the last time? We've had some lovely reviews, haven't we? Because, I tell you what, the plane crash episode we did went down gangbusters, didn't it? People loved that plane crash episode.
Yeah, thank you for listening. We heard from the lovely Laura Sheru on Facebook.
Facebook.
We haven't used that for a while. We're right getting back into Facebook, actually. We're quite enjoying playing around on Facebook.
The Facebook.
No fake news on our account.
No news at all, because I don't even know the login anymore.
Laura has said, "My favourite podcast. It's well researched and their delivery is perfect. They are funny but respectful, which is a tough combination. Phil and Phil do it with ease whilst covering a broad range of topics. I look forward to every episode. Start at the beginning and enjoy." Thank you, Laura.
Oh, cheers, Laura. JCH Clark from the United States says, "One of a kind.
Ooh.
This is my favourite podcast, hands down. I learned so much information about the disasters and laughed till I cry at the same time. God bless you, JCH Clark. Don't know how you guys do it, but you make even the worst disasters fun to listen without minimising their loss." And I hope we've done that today with this very serious tale of monkey escape.
Mm.
Monkey escapes affect us all, don't they, Phil? And it's something that we shouldn't take lightly.
I never forget the Monkey Mountain Six.
If you have any information on the whereabouts of Al Capone and the Monkey Mountain Six, then please get in touch. You can contact us on all the platforms now because Judy's looking after it, which is bloody marvellous. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the lines are open.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add?
No. I'm going to put my fan on. I'm going to cool down. Then I'm going to go to bed.
Okay, Phil Lucas is off to bed. Thank you so much for listening to the Monkey Mountain episode of the Crash Bang Walnut podcast. We will see you in 2 weeks' time or wherever we get round to it for another tale of woe and monkey trauma.
Never forget the Monkey Mountain Six.
We'll see you next time. Goodbye!